Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. This is Doug from Barbell Shrugged. I just want to let you know that we now offer 11 of our top training programs as a part of a single membership site that we're calling the Program Vault. Now, we used to launch training programs every few months, and people were always bummed that they couldn't sign up at any time. You had to be around for the launch. The launch was only 4 or 5 days. If you missed it, then you had to wait 6 months or a year, depending on what training program we were offering next. And it was kind of a hassle, even when people were signed up for training programs, to switch to a different program when they got to the end of their current program, or they just happened to be in a new phase of training. They hit their past goal, and now they have new goals, and new goals require different training programs. So inevitably, it was a pain in the ass for people to switch programs. So we took all that feedback, and we decided to just put all of our programs together on this thing we now call the Program Vault. That way, all Shrugged athletes could have access to all the workouts that we have and move from program to program as they saw fit for themselves. Makes sense. So there's 11 programs. Three of them are long-term, very comprehensive programs where there's, you know, a warm-up and there's mobility and there's nutrition added in there. All the workouts are there. There's a cool-down. There's stuff to do on your off days. They're super, super comprehensive. And those programs last for over 18 months if you want to stick around for that long. And there's also 8 short-term programs. These programs are 3 months long, and these are basically add-on programs. So if you are already doing classes at a gym and you don't want to stop doing your classes, but you want to work on one particular thing, maybe you want to like work on your shoulder health, or you want to work on your conditioning, like your aerobic capacity, or maybe you just want to work on your squatting strength or your pull-up strength or something like that, then we have these short-term add-on programs that are super low volume, but they're just like an extra, you know, 2 or 3 exercises at the end of your workout to help work on whatever those very specific goals are that you have. So the 3 long-term programs are flight weightlifting. That's a very weightlifting specific training program. It builds you from someone who is more like beginner intermediate at weightlifting and builds you up to be a more technical professional style weightlifter, you know, over the course of 12 or 18 months. We also have Muscle Gain Challenge. If you just want to put on muscle mass and you want a higher volume training program, this, in my opinion, is more of an intermediate program. If you don't have good technique on the Olympic lifts yet, you're going to kind of be throwing right to the wolves, so to speak. It doesn't ramp you up like Flight does. Flight has very specific progressions for weightlifting to let you learn all the technique over time. Muscle Gain Challenge kind of just throws you right into it. So ideally, you already have some experience with Olympic weightlifting before you start the Muscle Gain Challenge. And there's a very high emphasis, of course, with the Muscle Gain Challenge on gaining muscle. So that means you got to eat a lot of food. So there's a lot of emphasis on how much to eat, what to eat, and your recovery as a part of that program. So that way you can get bigger and stronger. Also, we have Shrugged Strength Challenge, which is more of a traditional kind of CrossFit-ish program. If you do CrossFit classes at a CrossFit gym, you probably do some strength movements at the very beginning of class. You know, maybe you do front squats for 5 sets of 5, and then you do a Metcon that's, you know, 20 or 25 minutes or whatever it happens to be. That's more typical of the Shrugged Strength Challenge, where strength is the goal, but certainly conditioning is a key part of that as well. It just has more of a strength bias than kind of a regular generalized CrossFit-y type program. So the 8 short-term training programs, again, these are about 3 months long, and they're kind of an add-on program. So the first one is Boulders for Shoulders. That's a shoulder health and stability program, health, mobility, and stability program. That doesn't mean you're going to be doing a whole lot of jerks and overhead presses necessarily. This is, again, an add-on program. So you're going to be doing a lot of assistance work for your shoulders, your thoracic spine, et cetera. That way you can have the healthiest shoulders possible. There's the Aerobic Monster program, which is adding in a bunch of extra, mostly aerobic conditioning. You're going to be on the aerodyne a lot. You're going to be on the rower a lot. You're going to be doing a lot of monostructural stuff. So, you know, if you already have your regular workout, you do strength, you do your Metcon, and then, you know, as a very overly simplistic example, you do, you know, 20 minutes of rowing, or you do 30 on, 30 off for 10 rounds, where you're doing a hard 30 and an easy 30, or whatever it is. Just a little bit extra aerobic work. There's the Squat the House program, where, you know, we add in 2 leg exercises 3 days a week. So you might squat and then do some lunges or something like that. Depending on what your regular classes are like, you might already be doing a lot of squatting. But if you're not currently able to do a lot of squatting and you want to do some more squatting and you just want to add that onto your current training, then Squat the House is a great program. Anaerobic Assault, that is a high-intensity interval style program where you're doing very fast Metcons. So you might be doing aerodyne sprints, you know, 30 seconds on, 100% full speed, and then take a 3 minute break and do it again, or even, you know, five touch and go deadlifts followed by, you know, 10 burpees, rest 2 minutes and then do it again. But you're doing it all 100% full speed, really teaching you how to kick it into high gear and move very, very quickly when you're doing your Metcons. There's my first pull-up, which is not going to give you a whole lot of actually doing pull-ups. This is a program for people that can't do a pull-up yet, so there's a lot of assistance work for pull-ups, and there's a lot of extra assistance work for just all the muscle groups involved in doing pull-ups. Everything from just doing extra lat work, extra scapular retraction, rhomboid lower trap work, extra bicep work, etc., to help get you to the point where you can do your first pull-up. There's a strongman accessory program where you can be doing yoke walks, picking up stones, pulling heavy sleds, and things like that. And then there's two more programs that are kind of a little bit higher volume. You could do them on your own if you wanted to. And you also can combine these. You could do aerobic monster and anaerobic assault and my first pull-up all together if you wanted to, if you just wanted to add extra volume. But the last two, open prep, is exactly what it sounds like. Just gets you ready for the CrossFit Open or other similar competitions. You'll be doing a lot of Metcons. And the last one is barbell beginner to meet. It's prepping you for your first Olympic weightlifting competition. Each program is scheduled between 3 and 5 days per week. There's videos explaining all the programming. There's demos, there's technique explanations for everything. And then also you have access to the private Shrugged collective Facebook group. That way you can get advice from ourselves. We'll be in there hanging out. Our guests from our shows. We also have a bunch of athletes, coaches, and strength experts that are friends of ours that are in there too to help you out. If you're interested, since I've been talking long enough, you can go to shruggedcollective.com/vault for all the information. Again, that is shruggedcollective.com/VAULT. That spells vault. Go there, check it out. If you have any questions, email help@barbellshrug.com and enjoy the show.
Now you got to take a look at, this is what we're big on. We call it the triangle of awareness. Do you really know your goals?
Ooh.
There's three types of goals out there. Like, it's pretty clear cut. Are you performance goals? Are you aesthetic goals? Or do you want longevity goals? And if you're chasing performance, let's be super clear. You need to be at minimum maintenance calories, if not a small surplus.
Right.
If you want aesthetics and you want body fat loss, you have to be in a calorie deficit.
Right.
But a calorie deficit doesn't yield performance, and performance doesn't yield fat loss.
Right.
Like, if you look a certain way based on
Can I get an amen
maximizing on performance, right? Like,
episode is brought to you by Organifi. Anders, tell us about it.
Oh, Organifi. We're going to talk about the green drink, right? You know why we have to talk about the green drink? Because everybody that lifts weights has no problem getting down all the meat and all the cheese and all the bacon and all the things that make you big and strong, and they always forget about the vitamins and minerals. And even if you weren't forgetting about your vitamins and minerals, there's a really strong chance that you're not getting enough. Do you know how many red peppers you have to eat to get all of the vitamins you need in your day? There's not enough time. You don't have the energy to do all that. There's just too many red peppers. However, if you take this sweet green drink, which tastes better than every other green drink out on the market, then you're going to get all the vitamins and minerals. That means better performance, better sleep, better recovery, all of the things that you really want all in one sweet little green drink from Organifi. So get over to Organifi.com/shrugged. You're going to save 20%. You're going to make people happy. You're going to feel better. All you got to do, Organifi.com/shrugged. Save 20%. Go do it now.
This episode is brought to you by Thrive Market. Anders, tell us about it.
Oh, Thrive Market, the coolest grocery store in all of the internet. Actually, if you are very interested in eating organic food, fueling your workouts for performance, and making sure you are putting the highest quality ingredients and food into your mouth to make sure you're getting bigger, stronger, faster in the healthiest possible way. Thrive Market has all of the answers for you. And for Shrugged listeners, you're going to get $60 in free organic groceries, free shipping, a free 30-day trial, all at thrivemarket.com/shrugged. Once again, $60 in free organic groceries, free shipping, and a 30-day trial at thrivemarket.com/shrugged. Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. We are at the Fitness Business Summit in San Diego, California, hanging out with our bro, Doug Larson, in the house, Travis Mash.
Mash.
All the strong people hanging out with Travis. We've got Jason.
I just
Phillips.
Ruined that. Sorry, guys.
We got Jason.
I just ruined it.
Yeah. He hasn't lifted weights ever in his whole life.
No. Try this working out thing one day.
From IN3 Nutrition.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Jason Phillips in the house. So this is super cool to have you on. Following your career over the last, 5 years?
Yeah, something like
things
that.
Things have been taken off.
I appreciate that.
Super cool.
Thank you.
But what I really dig about the message is it seems like to me like nutrition is like kind of like an entry point. Mm-hmm. And what you actually really teach people to just think about their lives.
Yeah.
And really start kind of putting a lot of the pieces together once you get a hold of their brain a little bit.
I think people think that nutrition is the problem. And it likely is the problem, but it's like the fifth problem. There's four problems that precede nutrition that for whatever reason you keep skipping over because you think it's the food. And so you try this diet or that diet or this macro or whatever, and you're like, why don't these things work? And, you know, I like to tell people all the time, you know, the nutrition knowledge that we put out, it's all on Google. I just said it on the stage in front of 1,200 trainers. I'm like, I don't teach you anything ultimately new.
Yeah.
I teach you the reason that you haven't been able to implement all the nutrition knowledge that's out there. I teach you why you haven't been able to fix that or put that into your life or create success with it. And really, that's where I think we create success, right? I mean, I think that it's know your – I mean, as a coach's standpoint, it's know your client, know what makes them tick, know, like, how to connect with them. It's so much deeper than macros and nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, as you said, people think it's nutrition, but if you're coaching someone in a one-on-one setting, like, what's preventing Travis from reaching his goals might be different than what's preventing Anders from reaching his goals. So
it's really not that ice cream.
Corona.
Well, but here's the thing. Why is the ice cream omnipresent? Yeah. Or here's the thing. Do you need a diet that keeps the ice cream in? Right. So there's – and if that's the answer, okay, then we need to build a protocol. Like I like to – in our certifications, I reference a client that I've worked with in Chicago. Mm. And she has to have benders on like Friday and Saturday. And I'm not talking like small benders. Like I'm talking blackout drunk, like get so fucked up. Like, and I'm like,
she has to.
Bro, no, I'm like, I promise you, if anyone out there that knows me, like we went 6 months where like I made her cry on the phone. Like we went hard and I like tried to fix it and I couldn't. And I'm finally like, you know what? This is you. I need to give you freedom for 48 hours. So what I need to build you is a plan that allows you to be free for 48 hours. And so what happened was I said, hey, let's have a conversation. The other 5 days might not be as fun. They might need to be a little more rigid than what I originally wanted for your whole plan. But that rigidity will allow you to be you on Friday, Saturday. Are you cool with that? She said 100% yes. Dude, we lost 30-plus pounds, right? Yeah. It just came down to I don't know why she needs to have that. I don't really care. I just needed to know she had to have that. Right. We went through that process together.
I think a lot of the stuff that has been really cool watching, too, is –
blacked out. Sorry.
Well, I gotta get blacked out. If you knew the stories I heard, oh, it's epic. I
want to meet this lady. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Right. On a Saturday,
she's a lot of fun. I promise. Yeah. She's a lot
on Friday and Saturday.
Friday or Saturday.
I don't
not
care.
Sunday.
Tuesday and Wednesday.
She's no fun on Tuesday.
No, dude, zero fun.
This personal prescription that you kind of buy into, and not just this one size fits all thing. And that's something that drives me nuts about the macro thing. It's like, just hit these macros and life is going to be great. And it's so like
it's so much more than that.
It's just as empty as the calories that they're eating.
100%.
And kind of what is the progression that you've taken with people and realizing
this? It's funny if you talk about macros today, right? So here we are 10, like let's call it 2007-ish. Paleo got really popular, right? Yeah. And that was the beginning of the quality-based prescriptions. So it was like, well, let's have all the high-quality foods, which is that even a fucking term? Like, how do you define quality of a food, right? Like, let's call it micronutrient-dense foods.
Yeah.
Like, you had all these micronutrients foods you could eat. You know, according to Gary Taubes, you could eat all the fucking healthy food you want. As long as you didn't have sugar, you weren't going to get fat. I call bullshit. Alan Aragon has called bullshit several times. 5,000 calories, even if it's salmon and broccoli, is going to make you fat. Like, it's just, it is what it is. Like, you eat physiological, like thermodynamics, those laws, they haven't changed. But then we got to this macro world, and all of a sudden, it was, you can have whatever you want in your macros, and you're going to be successful. And as with everything else, Western culture, we went to the extreme. And it was like, well, fuck, if I can have everything, why don't I just eat nothing but pizza, Pop-Tarts, ice cream, and donuts all day?
Sounds
and,
good.
And so you got people literally out there promoting the fact, glorifying the fact, that they're consuming nothing but sugar to get to where they want to be.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Yeah. Like, that ignores inflammation. It ignores long-term health. It ignores so many things that...
carcinogens. There's so many things.
So many things, dude.
That's for guys like me, you know, strength and conditioning coaches. I mean, at that point, you lose us. And we're like, no.
Yeah.
This whole industry now becomes a joke if you're not careful.
And I mean, honestly, macros got super popular. And listen, we're a macro company. I make no bones about it. We prescribe macros. But we prescribe quantity with a heavy emphasis on quality.
I like it. Mm-hmm.
And so in Western culture now, all the macros and all the quality or all the quantity-based prescriptions are referenced in terms of body fat, okay, right. Or in reference in terms of aesthetics or body composition. So if people are coming to you and they're hiring these macro guys, all they're getting is plans that revolve around fat loss.
Which is
they don't even care about the performance that you're trying to get, that you care about.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a very good mix.
No.
So now you got to take a look at, this is what we're big on. We call it the triangle of awareness. Do you really know your goals?
Ooh.
There's three types of goals out there. Like, it's pretty clear cut. Are you performance goals? Are you aesthetic goals? Or do you want longevity goals? Yes. And if you're chasing performance, let's be super clear. You need to be at minimum maintenance calories, if not a small surplus.
Right.
If you want aesthetics and you want body fat loss, you have to be in a calorie deficit.
Right.
But a calorie deficit doesn't yield performance, and performance doesn't yield fat loss.
Right.
Like, if you look a certain way based on
can I get an amen
maximizing performance, right? Like, I'm preaching to the choir, bro.
Preach,
yeah.
Preach.
So, but so many people are overlooking this. But what I love about society and what I love about where we're going, guys like Ben Greenfield that are starting like the biohacking culture, I think you're starting to see the undertone of all the goals. It's starting to. We're not there yet. We're still probably 5-6 years away. Starting to have a subset of longevity-based prescriptions, right? So the healthier foods, the lack of inflammation, things that people should be looking at are starting to come to the forefront.
I mean, as a performance coach,
yeah,
this is what I want to hear. You know, like the whole just macros fits all. I mean, I need something that's going to make my athlete. You know, I have athletes who want to get to the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or, you know, Tommy Bohannon is the starting fullback for the Jaguars.
Yep.
That dude has got to perform on Sunday.
Absolutely.
And that means millions of dollars to him.
100%.
So if he doesn't perform,
yep.
Like, we just cost him money.
But let's keep it real. On that day, you do what you got to do to recover.
Right.
Right? So does that mean we eat sugar if we need sugar for the carbohydrates? You're fucking right we do.
Right.
Right? On that day.
Right.
Right? Now, the rest of the week, we're going to bring down the inflammation. We're going to control the GI issues that were caused by that sugar. Right? We're going to fix that.
Right.
And in season, our job is to fuel and recover.
Right.
So if food quality is not as high in season, we do what we got to do. Right? We maximize it. We get him through. But you better be periodizing his nutrition. So that coming out of season, you're doing full body movement work for restoration, right, to fix him. I better be giving a prescription that allows his nervous system to recover. I better be giving him a prescription that allows his hormones to recover. And I also better be giving him a prescription that allows his GI to recover.
Let's talk about GI.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, let's get deeper. Tell me the foods that are going to help his GI.
So a lot of it, there's some fasting protocols that we use. There's some bone broth protocols that we use. Glutamine supplementation. I think a lot of people look at glutamine purely as a recovery agent.
Right.
Actually, if you start looking into the PubMed studies, you're starting to see a lot of people are using it to heal the epithelial cells. So high dose glutamine, like we're talking Poliquin type doses, 20, 40 grams a day.
Poliquin's my boy, by the way.
Yeah. And he's big on that shit, right?
Yes.
So things like that, and then controlling food quality,
right.
Bringing down the sugars, bringing down all of the, any GI irritants, right? A lot of higher-end athletes will do, MRT testing or Cyrex if they have availability.
Right.
We'll find out what foods don't agree with them, and those are out. And that has to be out in season.
Right. Would you say that's the most important first piece? Like, limiting the damage is more important than, trying to put a Band-Aid on the damage 100%. After it's been
100%.
Done.
Yeah, I mean, once it's done, and this goes in the whole periodized model, coming out of season – he doesn't have to perform for 60 days.
Yeah.
And 60 days, he's really not training very much either.
No.
He's recovering.
Yes.
So those 60 days, you shouldn't be putting a Band-Aid on shit. You should begin the repair process, right? It would be like, oh, I just broke my arm, but for the first 60 days, I'm going to put a Band-Aid on it, and then later I'll fix it. You just came out of season. You don't have anything to do. Let's fix that shit.
Yeah.
Once that's fixed and you enter your off season healthy, your job as the strength coach is to build more strength, more power, more skills.
Right.
Our job is to fuel strength and skill acquisition.
Right.
So off-season nutrition has its own set of requirements. Then you start doing more sport-specific work preseason.
Right.
I have to start fueling more preseason work and recovering from more skill-specific work. Then we're back in season. Rinse and repeat every single year. You have to periodize nutrition the same way coaches are periodizing training. But everyone's missing this.
No one talks about any of this.
No one's talking about nutritional periodization. But it is the crux of doing it properly for an athlete.
What about hormonal levels? Like you were talking about that.
Yeah. Well, so when you're in season, you know, for a football player or let's talk CrossFitter. I know a lot of CrossFitters are listening. You know, it's a lot of glycolytic work, right? The fuel demands are built on carbohydrate.
Right.
We know that it's very, very intensive on the sympathetic nervous system. We know there's excess cortisol release. We know there's going to be a hit on testosterone levels.
Right.
And we know there's going to be a hit on the HPA.
Right.
We have to fix that.
Right.
Coming out, they shouldn't be so far gone that 60 to 90 days of proper nutrition doesn't fix that. So let's get some dietary fat back in your protocol, but let's also prioritize recovery. Let's get some supplements in there, right? Some adaptogens. Let's put that into your protocol. You know, if it's a testosterone estrogen thing, like even small things, just like veggies, like broccoli, indole-3-carbinol and broccoli, bringing down the estrogen levels, whatever it might be, whatever minutia you have to go to get that advantage. We live in a world right now where performance is at an all-time high. You know, separation is, it's minutia.
Yeah,
right. We need to be living in the minutia.
How are you finding some of that? Like, what are the assessments, or is it blood work? How are you kind of approaching it?
Whatever the client can do, blood work would be amazing.
That'd be awesome.
But, you know, we work a lot on what we call biofeedback. And so I think people identify purely as physical beings. What is the weight on the scale? What is my body comp in the mirror?
Yeah.
Or let's be more real. What is the perceived body comp in the mirror?
Yeah.
Because as a former anorexic, I can tell you, looking in the mirror is not always accurate. So, you know, how's your sleep? How's your energy? How's your mood? How's your sex drive? How's your ability to focus? Those are the data markers that are far more important to me.
Yeah.
In fact, if I suspect any eating disorder tendencies, I will eliminate the scale. I'll eliminate physical measures, and I'll work purely off of those data markers.
I've actually noticed a lot of that stuff kind of in your videos on yourself, where you go and do, it's like, hey, I'm going to go into this cut cycle. 2 weeks in, you're like, fuck that.
I'm done. Yeah.
I'm about to die.
Oh, dude, and super pure, like super transparent. Last year we did shredding season, right?
Yeah.
It was meant to be a vlog, 16 weeks. I was going to get super shredded. I got halfway into it. We launched our level one certification. Fucking intense. Like writing a manual, launching a course. Like it was hard.
Yeah.
You know, new family at that point and all the travel, being in a calorie deficit and training hard.
Yeah.
I came home from the first level one and didn't get out of bed for like 4 days.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't do this. I cannot put myself back into adrenal fatigue, HPA axis dysfunction, whatever you want to call it. And I pulled the plug. I went radio silent on the vlog for like two months. Right. Everyone's like, what happened to shredding season? I'll fill you in, motherfuckers.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had to make a video and I had to be transparent. I had to be honest. And I said, listen, shredding season was a success. Not because you guys see a physical difference in me, but because I understand that I need to manage my lifestyle relative to all the stressors. And it was reinforcement to me that I need to gain control of those things, that if I'm not 100%, I can't create 100% for anybody that's in our network. And, you know, we're chasing impact, man. We want to create coaches. We want to create success for clients, whatever it might be.
I wish it's unfortunate so many of us learned that lesson. I remember training for regionals, opening a gym at the same time, running a business, and getting, like, married in a year, like, getting engaged. And you're just like, does this fitness thing really matter to me?
Yeah,
I am just drilling myself as deep into a hole as possible.
Yeah, it's hard.
And you come out of that and you don't realize it. And then the next time you're about to go there, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, whoa, wait a second.
So
I need to back this thing
well,
down.
So let me ask you this. So you went there.
Yeah.
I have this theory, and I don't think that will ever be proven. And I don't think that they'll ever approve a study to prove it. But I call it nervous system adaptation. And I think that people that have, and I think like Mike McGoldrick might be a really good example. He went to regionals, he went to the games, but I think he did so, and in speaking with him, because I worked with him later, he was very, like, deep into HPA axis dysfunction when he went.
Yeah.
And so the next year, he went to regionals, and I think he was, like, outside the top 20. It's like, how do you go from games to outside the top 20 without a major injury? Like, that's weird. And talking to him, he's like, I just didn't have that second gear, which we know is indicative of your HPA being super fucked up.
Right.
And so, like, we talked about his nutrition, and, like, I was doing a nutrition for his weight cut for Olympic lifting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he tried so many different things, and he could never get his nervous system to light up like it once did. I think he was adapted. I think his body was like, I remember what it was like to go super deep. You didn't give me the recovery that I needed, so I will never create that level of output again because I'm never going to be able to recover from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it nervous system adaptation. It's not clinical. It's 100% empirical, but I definitely believe it exists.
That's what happens before someone goes to attempt to test something. You have to figure it out, like, anecdotally or, like, have a theory,
agreed.
And then you can go test it. So just because there's no research to back it up doesn't mean something like that is happening.
Right.
Now you can
because nobody's talking about
you could
it.
Suggest it, and then someone can go, okay.
I just don't know how they would study it.
We can go talk to Andy, and he can go talk to someone who might be able to figure that out.
I love Andy. And it's really funny, like, Andy just released things. He's like, everyone's talking about nervous system and how it's not important. And I'm like, I think that's semantics, because I think it's not the nervous system does not create power output, but it does allow for cortisol to be released. And if your nervous system is not allowing cortisol to be released and allow you to go super deep in that sympathetic nervous system, then I don't think you're going to be able to create the power output that you potentially could. So is that nervous system directly? No, but I do think it's an underlying factor. Andy's going to come on our stuff next month, and I can't wait to talk about it and get his opinion there. Dude, he and I align on virtually everything. Like, I fucking love that guy.
I hope so, because he's the scientist that proves us all right or wrong.
Yeah, no, dude. Like,
if you're lined up with him, that's a good person.
No, like we're like, super aligned.
I know what I'm talking about.
We had fighters. We both had fighters at UFC Fresno, and we happened to talk on, like, Wednesday, right before our guys went to the scale. And man, it was awesome.
I love when you talk to him, and you're like, I kind of feel this thing. And he's like, it's this, this, and this, and you're like, oh, smart
like,
people,
thank you.
No! I knew there was something to this.
He's such a good dude.
You said that you were a former anorexic?
Yes, sir.
You're the first male.
Yeah.
So I would like to talk about that.
Let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it. Anything you want, man.
Yeah, so how did that happen?
All right, so agree or disagree, in 2002, every male's wet dream, every male 18-year-old's wet dream was to be an Abercrombie model. So I was approached by Abercrombie to do some modeling. I was a rehabbing golfer. I was a very highly ranked golfer. I had torn my labrum. I was rehabbing the injury.
You don't look like a golfer.
I graduated high school at 5'9", 130.
No shit.
Yes, sir.
I think this is an improvement.
I'll show you the picture off air. Yeah. It's a big improvement. Yeah. Anyone peep my Instagram, like one of the first ever posts, it was bad. Basically, the recruiting agent, she said to me before I left the store, she said, hey, when you send me pictures, make sure you send pictures of your abs. Dude, listen, golfers eat burgers, mac and cheese, milkshakes. I went to Taco Bell every single day after high school. They knew my order. It was that bad, okay? I'm asking around. I'm like, how do I get abs? How do I get abs? You know, I'm in the gym for rehab, so I'm training harder, doing more cardio. Yeah. And my pediatrician at the time, he was like, hey, I want you to – it's all nutrition-based. You just need to read the magazines, read the nutritional stuff. You'll be fine. You're young. You got a good metabolism, right? Started reading the magazines and said, don't eat this, don't eat this, don't eat this. And I never had a list of what to eat, but I had this massive list of what not to eat. Well, before I knew it, I wasn't fucking eating. I was so afraid of food. But, dude, it's mental at that point. You're so fucked. Like, I would finish dinner with my family. It'd be, like, chicken, green beans, and, like, salad. I would go to my room, and I would do crunches. Because I thought that the food I ate just went to fat in my stomach. That was my vision of food, dude, when I was 18.
Yeah. Yes.
And, dude, what that brings about as a person sucks. Like, I was depressed. I had no self-esteem. I had no drive. I couldn't stay awake after 2 o'clock. My testosterone levels were off the charts low. I had testosterone levels at 18 years old of a 90-year-old male.
That's terrible. And I know what you're saying.
It's no way to live.
Everybody used to say, oh, he looks like an Abercrombie model. That used to kind of be the
that reference. Was the thing, dude.
So I can imagine if somebody say, hey, would you want to be an Abercrombie model?
Oh, and I was in the store with my mom trying on clothes, right? And the woman comes up to me and she's like, have you ever considered modeling? Like, would you do it for us? And I was like, fuck yeah, I'll get every girl under the sun.
Yeah,
are you
exactly.
kidding me? Like,
18-year-old
here I am. Like, I'm going to be like, hey. Oh, girl, you don't know who I am, but look in this magazine. Those are my abs, right? Like, ironically, if you only knew where my abs had been now.
Yeah.
I'll out myself. I was the abs on the cover of that waist belt that shocks you.
Oh, nice.
Oh, dude, that was me in the infomercial.
That was like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's where I went, man. I went from Abercrombie or, you know, almost to Abercrombie. I did end up shooting with them. So I did make it eventually. And then I went to the whole, I gained a little bit of muscle, and then they wanted me to be the abs on the belt shocker thingy.
The belt shocker.
And whatever the fuck they call it.
They used to sell that for strength training, and now it's like a rehab thing. So no one even know, like, just recycle that.
Like a lot of girls.
It's amazing how they do that, dude.
When a girl gets, you know, she says that she's anorexic or whatever, there's a lot of, you know, it can kill.
100%, dude. Oh, yeah.
So, like, how far down did you go?
I was 48 hours away from a clinical intervention. My parents and my doctor were 48 hours away from taking me to a clinic. And, you know, it wasn't until several months or even years later that they told me that. And the funny part is, when you're anorexic, you don't know it.
Yeah.
So I look back and everyone's like, well, you know, how did you overcome it? Well, I didn't think I had a problem. Right? And honestly, the way I overcame it was I was opening up Gold's Gym. Right? So I said I couldn't stay awake after like 2 p.m. Well, I was opening up Gold's Gym 5 a.m. to 11.
Right.
And, you know, this trainer, she saw what I was doing to myself. And this bodybuilder would come in every day, and he was dieting for a show. And I'm like, I want to look like him.
Yeah.
You know, jacked, lean. Like, that's what I want to be. And she's like, oh, I do his nutrition. Dope. Can you do mine? Of course. You need to go home tonight and you need to eat 4,000 calories. That's what she told me. And I was like, this is 2000. This is 2002.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no My Fitness Pal. Yeah. So I went to Barnes & Noble. I bought a calorie counting book. I shit you not, bro. Fair Oaks Mall, Northern Virginia, Barnes & Noble, bought a calorie counting book. I wrote out a 4,000-calorie meal plan. I executed the next day. I went from 800 calories to 4,000 calories overnight. Wow. Nutrition coaches that are out there that are watching this, please don't ever do that. But I did it.
Did you get fat?
3 weeks later, I look in the mirror. Yeah. No fat gain.
Nice.
And that's when I was like, you know what? I trust this food thing a little bit. Yeah. I trust clean food at 4,000 calories. Mm-hmm. Then it was building the trust game. Because then I transferred to Florida State, right? I changed my major. I'm like, this whole food thing saved me. I need to fix my life. I'm going to pay it forward.
Yeah.
And I went there. But, you know, you're a 19-year-old dude. You're going to hang out with other 19-year-old dudes. Yeah. You're supposed to go out drinking. You're supposed to eat food while you're drunk.
Yeah.
And I was petrified of eating, like, shitty food while I was drunk. For whatever reason, I wasn't petrified of being drunk. But I was petrified of the pizza while I was drunk.
Or the Waffle House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, literally.
That's a very Southern comment
listen,
of you.
If you've been to Tallahassee, there's the famous Waffle House on Tennessee Street. Everybody's been there.
I've actually been to Tallahassee.
Yeah, so you know the one I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah, right across from, like, Guthrie's, okay? We've been to those places a few times.
Unfortunately, I know.
But I would go home from eating those things. And I would go to bed with the single thought that I was going to wake up in the morning and my abs were going to be gone because that one meal completely made me gain fat. And that was the thought I had.
Jeez.
So I would wake up in the morning, I'd go rush in the mirror. You want to talk about a mental battle, dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, I take a look back now and I live like when, you know, in our education platform at NCI, we live by the quote, education drives compliance. I think I take a look back now and the reason I overcame it and became successful is because I was educating the whole time. I was learning how it worked. I was learning how this wasn't going to make me fat, how to implement this into my life. But more importantly, I was learning the lifestyle that goes into not creating change. I was learning the mindset that goes into not creating change. And so I think, you know, what we talked about earlier, the success that we now have as a company is predicated on understanding that. I think that was put in my life so that I could actually help others. I would never wish an eating disorder on my worst enemy.
Right.
It is a mental fuck that is so hard to overcome and recover from. But because we've gotten there, I feel like we're in such a position to pay for it.
Yeah, now you can empathize with people where other people can't, and that's a huge advantage.
I mean, we were all just in there talking to Samantha Skelly, and, you know, that's what she does. And she brought me on her show, and it was the first male that had openly talked about it. And since I've done it, she said it's like the floodgates have opened. So many guys are reaching out to her, and she's so good at helping people overcome it. She's amazing. Like, I don't know if you guys have talked to her, but she's so good.
I haven't talked to her yet.
She's amazing with eating disorder stuff, man. Like, her shit is good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, there is a social stigma, if you will, around guys being anorexic.
It's not very alpha. It's not like, oh, I'm a badass because I'm an anorexic. No, not so much.
Yeah.
Can I drink coffee while we're on there?
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotta keep the energy rolling. Coffee.
Okay, good. I'm like that adrenaline's gonna dump after stepping off stage. Like,
sooner or later.
So at some point, it's gotta come down. No, so man, I'm fired. Let's go.
The person that was writing you the meal plan, the person that said like, I want you to go home and eat 4,000 calories. Yep. Was that person around to mentor you, or was that just like a one time deal?
She was around because I stayed opening Golds and so she was around. But literally, the singular piece of advice to this day that she ever gave me was to eat 4,000 calories. And I think as it happened after 3 weeks, I became more educated, and I was like, wait a minute, this whole fucking men's fitness thing is wrong, ironically, like 10 years later, I wrote for Men's Fitness. But like,
does she know that piece of information like changed your
whole
life?
No, dude. Like,
you got to get that out there.
So,
yeah, you gotta
okay, so here we go. Right?
Thank
so,
you.
All right, we'll put this out, right? Her name is Stephanie Tortorella in Northern Virginia. If she somehow gets this, like that singular piece of advice changed my life. And I don't know if she knows
what
it.
What gym
like,
were you out there?
Yeah. Gold's Gym, Chantilly.
Right on. I've trained.
Somebody
there.
Listening to this knows Stephanie. Tell Stephanie to DM Jason.
Yeah, like somehow, man, I would love to thank her. I think it's so rad. And the cool thing is, like, my wife and I moved back home to that area. So I'm living in Northern Virginia again. And my pediatrician at the time that, you know, he was always there for me as I overcame it. And he was obviously super happy I did. Like, we remain connected. So that's been pretty cool.
So I'm curious, you know, with getting back to macronutrients
and
performance, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, intra workout.
Yep.
Now, Charles Pogan used to say, you know, it's not breakfast. It's the most important. Mm-hmm. It's the intra workout. It's what you do before, during, and after. Would you agree with that or not?
I think the studies are really mixed.
Okay.
I think, so the first person what I heard talk about was Poliquin.
Me
I think
too.
I think Joe Kozemski and Lane Norton made it very popular in like the bodybuilding space, which I think the bodybuilding space drives a lot of nutritional protocols elsewhere.
Yes.
Unfortunately, because I don't always think it's proper, but it is what it is, right? We got to acknowledge it. So Lane did it for a long time, and I followed him when he did, and all of a sudden he stopped. And the research on GLUT4 and as to whether it's upregulated or downregulated, and it actually allows to enter the cell during training because of GLUT4,
right.
I think studies are very conflicted. And so it depends on the sport is kind of who I would be talking about. You know, for CrossFitters, when I put out the fuel strategy for 18.2, I think that some intra workout between finishing the workout and that lift, and we're talking 2 minutes for a lot of people, mm-hmm. I think that a spike of insulin, so something like a highly branched cyclic dextrin, like that little bit of insulin spike is enough to calm the nervous system to get your shit together and hit a big lift.
Right.
So at that point, I would say yes.
You just mentioned GLUT4 transporters. Like, people know what those are. can you like drop some science on us real quick and just explain how that works?
Well, so basically, I mean, like, when you've got something in the bloodstream, it has to cross into the muscle, right? Or has to cross into the cell. Mm-hmm. GLUT4 is what allows upregulation or downregulation of that barrier, of that like barrier of entry. So it's, you know, when you're training, like the whole conflict is around like whether or not like that barrier exists or not. So it's essentially think of like you're drinking the nutrients, but at some point they have to end up in their destination, right? Which you want to be your muscle cells, right? For recovery or performance.
Right.
The question is whether they can get to the muscle cells during exercise while GLUT4 is upregulated.
Right. And if they can't get to the muscle, the natural way of things is if they can't go to the muscle, they're going to go somewhere else.
Stores
potentially.
Yes. I honestly think ultimately it will end up in the muscle. I just don't think it's when you want it. From the research I've read.
Right.
I think, at some point, I don't think you're going to store BCAAs or, like, the carbohydrates you're ingesting intra-workout as fat.
Right.
I don't think that, you know, I think that insulin spike is not going to lead to fat storage. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think they're as quick. I really think, man, like, if you're doing everything properly, and we're talking athletics, we're not talking aesthetics,
right,
okay?
Yeah.
Completely different protocols. Right. I believe aesthetics, you really have to pack your carbs around your training because it's when you're very insulin sensitive.
Right.
Right. And I think you need to be trying to lose fat the rest of the time, like the other 24 hours, right?
Right.
Or 20 hours. Athletics, I think you should be taking in enough carbohydrate every single day to fuel your activity.
Right.
Glycogen synthesis happens 24 to 36 hours. Right. So even though you're pounding carbohydrate around your activity, you're not necessarily using all of that. It's not readily available for X number of hours. You know, everyone's got different rates of metabolism, but it's not. Let's call it 4 or 5 hours at a minimum, right? You can use some of it, but you can't use all of it.
Right.
So if you're having enough carbohydrate every single day, there's really no reason for us to have to load up at that time unless it's going to be an effort that is abnormally high when maybe you're using some sugars. Exactly.
Right.
So there's people in the space, in the athletic space, that are like, oh, well, low carb all day and then put your carbs right before. The only reason that you need those fucking carbs right before is because you're not giving people enough glycogen the rest of the day.
All day.
Right. Yeah. So feed them the fucking carbohydrate they need at other times of the day, and you won't have to fucking do that.
You guys hear, it all goes back to, can we just, like, eat normal? I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like he's just saying, like, just eat healthy. Almost every human.
Eat the right quantity with high quality, and you're pretty fucking safe.
And you're safe. Like,
yeah.
So you don't have to do all these crazy. You know,
I remember.
I think nutrient timing is just a very small piece of the equation, or are you talking about. Just
I think nutrient timing helps recovery more than it helps. I think it helps recovery, which boosts performance.
Mm-hmm.
I think people look at it as a performance enhancement tool, but what they don't understand is that it's helping them recover faster.
Which
and
is
that
performance.
Faster recovery is the performance enhancement.
That is.
But you're not going to get a dose response from having a little extra carbohydrate right before an activity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, like, okay, 18.4 got announced. I don't know when this will release, but 18.4 got announced last night, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit of extra carb before
all
that because you need a deadlift, right?
All the
deadlifts. And by the way, sympathetic nervous system shit show.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
People don't know right now because we're one day into it. They're fucked.
Yeah.
They're going to feel so bad after this workout.
Yeah.
You're going to finish, and 10 minutes later, you're going to get a kick in the dick. And you're going to be like, what the
terrible.
Fuck just happened?
It looks
like,
terrible.
And then the next day, you're going to wake up foggy, inability to focus, a little bit of a headache. And you're going to be like, what did I do wrong? You didn't do anything wrong. It's just the nature of the workout.
Yeah.
225 is the perfect weight to make you feel like shit.
225
for
up to 315.
Yeah.
It goes 315, bro.
Oh, that's the next one.
315 is the second barbell.
Yeah. The 225 is not the scary one. It's
so I can deadlift over six at like my tiny size. And I can, you know, 315 is going to suck.
Yeah. 315 is going to suck for, what is it, like 50 reps or whatever?
It's 45 reps on each side.
That was actually the hardest workout I've ever done. 21-15 9 box jumps and 315 deadlifts. It was.
Oh, that regionals workout?
Fucking
oh.
Massacred me.
I remember I went unbroken on the first round of deads, and I was like, oh, I don't even want to jump.
That 10-minute thing you were talking about, I felt that. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about IN3 and how you've taken all these lessons, turned this into training trainers, getting coaches on the right page so they can help their athletes.
Let's do it.
Awesome.
Shrug listeners, incredibly excited to be announcing our recent partnership with Onnit. Onnit is the leading company in clinically backed research and development for nootropics and supplementation. We recently spent a week down at their facility in Austin, Texas. And from top to bottom, I can tell you that everything that these guys do is at the highest level, clinically researched, and they're putting all of their time and energy into creating the best products for you to perform at your highest level. Specifically, the nootropic Alpha Brain, which is their best-selling nootropic. I have been taking it. I have been digging it. I love it. There's no crashes like you often get from coffee. The ability to stay focused and have clarity throughout your day. We are operating at a very high level. We need to be on for interviews. We're traveling a lot, and we need to be performing in the gym. Alpha Brain gets us there. It keeps us there, and we're able to perform in the gym, out of the gym, without having these gigantic crashes throughout the day. Make sure you get over to onnit.com/shrugged. You're going to get a 14-pill trial, which is a week-long trial of their best-selling Alpha Brain nootropic.
Welcome back to Barbell Shrugged, here with Jason Phillips at the Fitness Business Summit. And you guys will be hearing this late, but we're going to talk a little bit about some nutrition prescription for 18-4 and how. Just a little bit of the thought process that goes into this for you on how you would attack some workouts. Everyone knows what 18-4 is, so walk up through it. And
tell them what it is.
Yeah, so 18-4 was Diane, 21-15-9, 225 dead, handstand push-up, directly into 21-15-9 deadlift 315 with a 50-foot handstand walk after each round.
So, and the highest level athletes are doing Diane now in
two and a half. I would say I've seen it done pretty quickly.
So that second
bar. But the truth is, it's not Diane, right? Yeah. Like let's, you know, from a strategy standpoint, it's not Diane because you're not racing at all at that point because the workout starts when you get to the second bar. And you know, in the announcement, you saw that Panchik was reasonably behind and he destroyed BK.
Let's talk about first before we get into nutrition.
Yeah,
what strategy would you have?
I would be breaking right away. I would be breaking the first set of deads. Depending on what your deadlift prowess is, at least into sevens on the first round.
If you can pull 500, are you going sevens?
Oh, yeah. Okay. If you can pull 500, you're going sevens. You can pull 600. If you can only pull like 450, you're probably doing what Scott did, 6, 5, 5, 5.
Just so you can see me die tonight, I'm going to do all 21 right off the bat as fast as possible.
Well, that would be me.
And then we'll get it on camera as I'm just laid out at minute 3.
Are you going to do it tonight?
Yeah, we're going to Invictus. Let's do it.
That's so funny, dude.
I'd like to see you
Travis
do a handstand.
I would like to see that.
Dude, if you guys get that on video, that would be epic.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk fuel. The key is it's 18.4. It's not 18.1. You're in a recovery debt at this point.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first thing you have to acknowledge.
Yeah.
You've competed at a minimum of 3 times in the last 3 weeks. But let's be real, you've probably competed 6 times in the last 3 weeks.
All mine have. Yeah.
So you've emptied the tank twice per week. So remember, like when you're training, you're not emptying the tank.
No,
it's training stimulus. You're not gonna like sell out for that last rep. And so it's a different, it's a different response physiologically on your body. Different dose response requires a different recovery response. So with 18.4, you know, you had to understand you're already there. So from a loading perspective, I had all my clients start loading carbohydrates last night. We added a little 40, 50 extra grams of carbohydrate just to make sure they had the fuel to complete the workout, right?
Right.
Pre-workout, I always break this down multiple times per day. Pre-workout, it's not one I want done fasted. So if my athletes don't have to do it fasted, we're not doing it fasted. If you have to do it fasted, there's really good compelling research that says a high molecular weight carb pre-workout is advantageous for performance enhancement. So we would use something like a cyclic dextrin. And I would recommend an extra 25 grams of carbs on top of what you're used to. So if you're used to doing a 50-gram carb shake pre-workout, I want you doing 75. If you're used to doing 25, I want you doing 50. If you're going later in the day, let's call it midday, you're probably going to get two meals in. The first one, I'm going to want protein, carbohydrate, and fats present, normal quantities for you. The second one, protein, carbohydrate, because there's still a breathing component. Fats are going to weigh you down a little bit. We want you to be able to breathe a little bit clearer. We want that food to be pretty digested. We want you closer to a fasted state. The closer you are to a fasted state, the easier cortisol elevates. Cortisol is super powerful in a competition arena. So protein, carbohydrate, about 90 minutes out. If you're later in the day, we're probably going to get two meals of protein, carbohydrate, and fat, and then that pre-workout meal of protein, carbohydrate. Nothing intra-workout. The only caveat I made in my strategy guide was if 315 is going to be a PR for you, then finish Diane and do what you did in 18-2.
Yeah.
Have that shake immediately post, like compose yourself, step up and rip that shit, right? And get yourself a fucking PR. There's people out there it's going to happen to. So you got to address that.
Baffles me that you're going to PR after that.
But some people will, dude. It happens all the time.
I see it.
I don't understand. Listen, you know what that is? Here's the thing. You know what that is? They're nowhere near their athletic potential.
Right.
They're still developing neurologically as much as they are physically.
Sure.
So that's not purely a physical PR. That's some nervous system or neurological PR.
And the cortisol, the burst of cortisol.
Oh, dude, it's like an adrenaline rush, man. Exactly. It's like the dad that's able to pull his daughter out underneath a car. He fucking lifts the car and pulls. You know, that's going to happen once in a lifetime. Can you repeat that? Fuck no.
But it's also going to what you said earlier. It's tomorrow. Yeah. Yep. The next day.
Dunzo.
Yeah.
Dunzo.
Yeah.
Like you should be consuming all of the carbs and planning on not leaving the couch for 2 days. Like, there's a reason open workouts are on the weekends. Like, let's be real. The recovery element is real. And I honestly wonder if that was done for that reason. It's because people have more time to complete it multiple times and because they actually have more ability to recover to produce better results.
I would love to see like a production chart of like CrossFitters through the open at work if they release it on like a Monday. It's like Monday through Friday, you get to do this. People are hitting it three times.
How many people are getting fired from their jobs?
Sitting at work, I just can't do anything.
A lot of people are getting fired.
If they're not fired, they're for sure getting warnings.
Yeah, dude. They're getting like more write-ups or they're just using all their vacation.
Every February,
where are you going on vacation? To the gym.
What would you recommend nutrition-wise to recover from this?
So post-workout's the next piece. I always recommend in open workouts you're having at least 25 grams more carbohydrate immediately post-workout than you're used to. So most athletes throughout the year, they're doing a 1-to-1 carb-to-protein, 2-to-1 carb-to-protein shake. I'd consider going 3-to-1, 2-to-1, or even 4-to-1. So some athletes are doing 100 grams of carbs, 25 grams of protein within 15 minutes following to bring down that cortisol response, right? Because remember, just because the time clock hit 9 minutes, your body doesn't know that. So cortisol doesn't just shut off. The shut off valve to cortisol is insulin. Yeah. So we got to get carbohydrate in there, and we need a significant amount of carbohydrate to shut off that extreme cortisol response. Now, what I recommended that was different this week was normally we recommend a meal about 60 to 90 minutes later, high food quality, micronutrient dense. I recommended an extension of that recovery window. So your meal should be predominantly protein, carbohydrate, still low in fat, to make the ease of digestibility very high, right?
Totally.
So perhaps simpler carbs than you're used to, maybe not as micronutrient dense, but more about that recovery piece, more about getting those carbs in. And then I look at recovery throughout the rest of the day. So I don't even count those carbohydrates I gave you immediately post-workout. I still want your carb intake to be 50 to 75 grams higher for that day than what you're used to. Now, recovery still happens 24 hours later. So the next day, I think your carbohydrate intake should be 50 to 100 grams higher again. Here's the kicker, though. All the people that are listening, they're like, oh, that's great from a fuel perspective. Then they get on the scale. They're like, fuck, I gained 5 pounds.
That's all right.
Inflammation, right? That's neural inflammation and carbohydrates, the scale is going to go up. Who the fuck cares? Did you get a better time?
It's like 3 days of your
life. Motherfucker, your position on the leaderboard was not determined by your scale number. I promise. They don't make Matt Frazier lift his shirt up on top of the podium.
No.
They don't.
Because
his abs aren't as good as Fikowski's. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Right? Like, let's be real. So,
if you're listening,
I love you, Matt. You're an amazing athlete, but Fikowski's got you on the abs. But, dude, Matt demolishes people.
Yeah.
But
and Matt's like, I'm getting paid.
Yeah.
You know? I think Matt is so much smarter than everybody. Maybe than everybody gives him credit for, but than everybody in CrossFit.
Dude, he stepped up to that 385 clean and smoked it.
Bro, he competes one time a year. Do you realize how powerful that is?
Oh.
Like, I don't think that people understand the recovery demands of competition relative to training.
Yeah.
Like, I love what Guido does with Wodapalooza. If you're a top athlete, I'm advising you not to do it. You cannot have that, like, cortisol dump that competition stimulus. You cannot empty the tank in January and expect to be fresh again for the Open, Regionals, and Games.
I totally agree. I think even like even powerlifting, like Ed Cohen would only compete twice a year.
Yeah.
Nationals, Worlds, and like everybody else is doing all these competitions. To look cool, you know, you want to do these competitions, look how strong I am.
Yep.
That dude was smart, and he had that such long career.
Yeah.
Like his career lasted till he decided to not.
Till he decided to finish.
Yeah.
Well, dude, what's the pinnacle of athletic achievement? Like we just finished it, the Olympics.
Yes.
They do it every 4 years.
Yeah.
Right? And they shut down like the World Cup shit right before that so that they can get ready for the Olympics. Nice. I think I have this theory that CrossFitters, there's such a gap on the male side. I think that somebody like a Fikowski, an Alex Vigneault, somebody like that that's close, but not really close, but close, needs to take at least a year off of competing. Don't go to the games. Don't compete in the games. Now, listen, I understand there's financial shit and all that, and I understand sponsor stuff. Like, I get it.
Right.
But if it was feasible, don't take a year off and build the comeback. If nothing else, fuck the marketing. You could sell with that. Let's be real. It'd be really good, right? Like anybody with a marketing mind, it would be amazing marketing, right? But
it's kind of like what George St. Pierre just did.
It's dude. But do you know how good he felt coming back? Do you know how good he felt coming back? I mean, listen, his age showed a little bit in the fight. But do you know how good he probably felt in camp?
Yeah. Well, he probably felt amazing.
He probably felt amazing in camp. Do you know how good you would feel getting to the games? Last year, I worked with Reagan Huckabee last year. I don't know if you guys like paid attention to the Northwest women, but she got like second or third at regionals. But I'm telling you, it was a walk in the park. Yeah. She didn't compete the year before. She was coming off an injury. Do you know how fresh her nervous system was? Dude, there was no extreme stimulus on it for 2 years. We walked into that shit fresh as a daisy. You know who I think is going to have a great year is Jacob Heppner. He didn't compete last year.
Well, he's like a 7-hour-a-day training guy.
But I think Brutes pulled him back a little bit. I hope.
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't think the dose response has to be as high.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah. So that's on the performance side. What are some of the things that are going into like the aesthetic side? You broke this stuff down and caloric. Because let's be honest, everybody wants to perform at a high level and look sexy as hell while they do it. Because
you have to have
your shirt off.
All right.
So Mash has got his shirt off all the time here.
If it were
I don't blame him.
We made him put his shirt on before we shot the show.
It's cold out here, so he's got a jacket on today. But if it wasn't, I guarantee his shirt's
off.
I'd be
naked.
It's all good. Hey, listen, bro. I don't blame you. It's all good. If I were you, I would too.
You're doing any modeling?
When I was doing Abercrombie, I might have, but today, not so much. No. Yeah. But hey, we'll submit your pictures.
I mean, right? I'd have to shave up a little bit.
At the foundation of all things nutritional.
Yeah.
But especially with aesthetics, it's stress and it's adaptation. And this is what nobody understands. The reason people can't lose like that last little bit of fat, or why they can't lose fat in general, especially in the CrossFit space, the abundance of stress is offsetting the ability to adapt. Fat loss is an adaptation, right? Your body using fat as the fuel and creating that fat loss is an adaptation. But if there's an abundance of stress, and let's talk about Western culture stressors, like my fucking second Americano, the lack of sleep that I've had for 3 nights, CrossFit, which is super intensive, plus Western culture, family, life, work, whatever it is, you have so much stress going on that – now you're in a deficit. You can't recover. If you're not recovering, what does your body do? It defaults to survival.
Right.
What is survival? It's fat storage. We're not meant to live 6% body fat with abs. We're meant to survive and thrive. That's who we are as human beings. It's innate to us. So if you're not giving your body the ability to adapt to the stressors, or if you're not controlling the stressors, you're not creating fat loss. So I would argue, CrossFit's not going to like me for this, 90% of people that want to lose a significant amount of fat need to pull back on the intense exercise.
Do some bodybuilding. Get a little pump in.
Yeah. Speaking of Brian Borstein earlier, right? We talked about Brian, and I think you guys are going to have him on.
Yeah.
But Brian works with a lot of people in my camp because he's really good at understanding just how much intensity you can have, and him and I work very closely together on that. We have one of our coaches doing a whole series right now. It's called From Performance to Aesthetics. We pulled her out of all of her CrossFit to achieve – her peak cosmetics. Dude, I'm telling you, she's going to shred it.
Yeah.
I can't wait to post those pictures. So,
well, one of the things that happened to me, so I, when I kind of got out of the competing thing, is, you know, finding like what my body was supposed to look like.
or feel like. Do you feel like you didn't know anymore towards the tail end of your competing and like when you shifted? Do you think that was eye-opening to you as to like, holy shit, I forgot what it was like to feel good?
Yeah. No, completely. My body was so wrecked. Yeah. And
It took me 2 years to get healthy, and now
2 years, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I want everybody to hear that.
Yeah,
because so many people think they're gonna come to me. Well, I cut out CrossFit last week. That must mean I can get lean this week. Yeah. No, motherfucker, you're probably so overdone. You're probably a year away from your body normalizing. So with Amanda, it was about 4 or 5 months before I really saw a normal response relative to fat loss.
Yeah, it's wild.
You know, openly and honestly, it's less intense. It's less caloric output. You do get to consume less food. But that's what's needed for extreme fat loss. If you want to be super ripped, you're going to have to get into poverty calories, poverty macros at some point to get those extreme levels. Mm-hmm. I don't think everybody should be chasing that. That's like stage shit. You can't stay there. Yeah, it's not maintainable.
No bodybuilder does. I mean,
no bodybuilder does, man. They have off seasons, you know, and the natural bodybuilding community, they're learning. They understand it. They compete like once every 4 years. Because real gains can only be made at such a rate with no exogenous hormones.
Natural gains can only be made.
It can only be made so fast, man. I mean, the pinnacle, and this is like, everyone's like, oh, I'm not gaining weight super fast, and I'm trying to gain muscle. A natural bodybuilder from year to year, they define their success. If they're 1 pound heavier on the stage from year to year, that's a success. One pound of muscle in 12 months. That's insane.
That's
and
reality,
people are like, but that's reality, dude.
That's just
and people are like, that's not sexy. Well, then take your drugs. Roll the dice on your health.
Yeah. When you get into like the body weight thing, it's a really interesting thing. Like, if I were to think about how hard it would be to put on 5 pounds of muscle right now, I have no interest in that because I know how hard that is.
You know how much food you'd have to eat?
Oh,
it's not even fun.
It's awful.
And you'd have to eat quality foods because it's like, obviously. Man, more and more research is coming out that high protein does, in fact, win in the offseason. Which, you know, I think there was this big movement towards, oh, you don't need as much protein if you've got the protein-sparing nutrients. The research is actually very clear that high protein will win.
I bet Charles is just like, my God.
Yeah.
He's been saying this since the 90s.
So, yeah. I mean, I think you have to have the subsequent carbohydrate and fat, but high protein is a necessity.
Totally.
You know, muscle protein synthesis for muscle building, super important. like, let's be real. Is it not the basis of building muscle? Come on.
Yeah. People never think about like, oh, what is this chicken going to do? I just have to eat the chicken.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that you're consuming muscles to turn them into muscles.
Yep.
So clearly you have your stuff dialed in with the actual nutrition stuff, but it's led into coaching coaches. IN3 Nutrition's. Dude, how many people?
We have 15 coaches.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We have 15 coaches under us. You know, we always have a farm system because we're always, we're always growing.
Yeah.
We're always open to growing. And I believe that, you know, what we're chasing is maximal impact, man. And I want to touch as many people as possible. Yeah. But the truth is, man, if we see 4,000 or 5,000 clients come through our doors a year, that's a lot. That's only 4,000 or 5,000 people, dude. Like, there's millions, if not billions of people in this world that need our help.
Yeah.
And so that's actually what's led us to building our education platform. And that's why we're certifying other coaches and helping them do the right thing the right way in the world.
I think it's been really cool to watch it, too, because it comes from a place of your own story. And the coaches that are drawn to that suffer from the same crap. And we're all, we come from this, like, performance world, and you want to help people get better at what they do so much. And then all of a sudden it's like, I'm just beating the shit out of people.
Yeah.
And we got to find better answers for people. And that was something I struggled with so much in the CrossFit world. It was like, how do I keep preaching this to people? Because
it's hard, dude.
It's fucking wrong.
It's not authentic anymore.
I can't make you better because if you do what I tell you to do in 2 years, you're going to be just run down.
Yeah.
And we have to take this better approach.
And that's why I actually think somebody like a Fikowski is so smart. He's come up so slowly.
Yeah.
His rate of improvement has been steady every single year. And if you talk to him about it, he understands the long game. I remember I had a conversation with him like the first year he made the games. I had a conversation with him 3 or 4 months prior at Wodapalooza. And I said to him, I think this is your year. And he said, no, I think I'm 1 year away. And just that statement alone, I was like, holy shit. Yeah. Like, you see the big picture.
That's
like,
hard.
You're totally playing the long game. And he was so adamant about it. He was like, nope, like, I got this hole and that won't get me through this year. And he fucking won every event or something. Like, he walked away with regionals and got second of the games. He got fourth that year.
Yeah.
But that's, to me, like, that's the intelligence you have to have. And you have to have the patience to play the long game.
Yeah.
We live in Western culture of instant gratification.
You want it right now. Yeah, I don't know.
Gratification, dude.
It's so
we
tough.
Want yesterday. Not even right now. Right now is too late. Like, we want yesterday.
But the greatest athletes, like, you know, in weightlifting, they're thinking, you know, we're thinking 4-year blocks.
100%, dude.
That works
You
fine.
Have to. Like, I think CrossFit as a culture, I think the best athletes have to start thinking at minimum in 2-year blocks.
Yeah, I think it'd be.
I really believe so. But the money, dude.
You can't do that much in a year, you know, especially like, you know, especially if they make the games. I mean, but it's not very long.
There's no off season. Yeah. Like we talked about the recovery. Let's say they take like the necessary time to recover. What are they going to do in terms of an off season to make improvement? There isn't one because they're back in the preseason.
They're back in the preseason.
So there's no time for that strength or skill acquisition you need as an athlete to be successful.
Now, I think a lot of them are missing just like getting that aerobic base. You know, that would help them so much if you really built your oxidative system up.
Well, if you look at some of the top athletes in CrossFit, a lot of I don't know if you you spend time in local boxes. Some of the best athletes I've ever been around, even at just a small level, are former swimmers.
Yeah.
My niece has cystic fibrosis, and so what they prescribe to her to keep her lung capacity very high is frequent swimming.
Of course. Yeah.
So if they're doing that at a medical level to keep lung capacity high with somebody that naturally has no capacity, what the fuck do you think that's going to do to you? And you're starting to see more swimming in protocols, but I don't think you're seeing it used. I think you're seeing it more used as active recovery.
Right.
I think you're seeing it used for like the aerobic base that I think it can deliver.
It should be.
And it's very low impact on the body, so the nervous system stress is very low. But I just don't think it's the time every single year. So I think if you go, you have a great year at the games. Even bodybuilding got into this, man. Like back in the day in bodybuilding, it was like the Arnold and the Olympia every year.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Jay Cutler, one year, he skipped the Arnold. He's like, I'm putting all my eggs into the Olympia basket, and he won.
Killed it. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, maybe I need more time to recover.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Why are we as athletes any different?
Yeah.
You know?
Those guys are in a tough spot, too, because if they have multiple photo shoots to do, they have like these kind of mini competitions that they're not really competing, but they got to look good.
They
can't put on too much body fat. They can't put on too much muscle mass. They have to stay lean year round. Yeah. And then that just fucking just destroys them for the Olympia or for whatever it is.
At least got to be within like a 4 or 5 weeks. Yeah. You tell me I got to shoot and 4 weeks of diet. And
That game's completely different. I lived in that world for a while. It's so hard.
How does that change kind of for the female population as well? We're talking about clearly male bodybuilders right now, but the female side of things gets even
Well, that's
more
why
complex.
You're seeing so many female physique competitors that are ruined.
Yeah.
I mean, the HPA dysfunction, the hormone dysfunction, the thyroid disorders, the sex hormone disorders that are happening with female physique competitors, it is alarmingly high. A female physique competitor can't stay close to stage shape more than 2 times per year. I will not work with a female physique competitor, and I don't really work with any anymore, but I wouldn't allow my female physique competitors to compete any more than twice a year. And there was a minimum of like 7 to 8 months between preps, meaning we finish a prep, you have 8 months, then we start prep. So it's probably a year between shows.
Yeah.
And trying to hold that peak, I mean, let's be real. Like we talked about, poverty calories, poverty macros, 12, 14, 1600 calories, maybe. Right? Because you have to, dude. Like a female is not designed to be 8% body fat.
Yeah, no.
It's not supposed to happen. It's not innate to your physiology, and you're manipulating that.
Yes.
Right? And I think that the science is starting to come out. Studies like the Matador study, studies that cite periods at maintenance will not impede fat loss, and you can use them to elevate metabolic activity. Like those are out there, and we're learning more, and we're staying healthier long term. But I still don't think it's healthy to be there, man. Like, it's just not the right way to go long term. I don't like it.
So how do you peel back the layers? You say a dude comes to you. Like, say that, hey, I'm coming to you. I'm like, hey, I'm going to start. I want to win the CrossFit game.
Yeah.
How do you peel me? Like, what do you start
with? It's really funny. I just got asked on stage, like, I come to you. What's the first thing I'm going to get? And I was like, you're going to get 50 questions. Right? Awesome. I'm going to learn about you.
Right.
But I have to, right? Yeah. Your age, height, and weight. Well, fuck. I'll go to like whatever macro calculator online, and you're gonna get the same shit.
Right.
Right. I want to know what have you tried, what have you not tried, what's been successful, what hasn't been successful.
Right.
I don't need to reinvent the wheel. Right. I need to take what's worked and I need to maximize it. I need to know where are you at in your performance? Where can we really get? What's realistic? And then based on that, let's build an implementation.
Right.
Now that implementation, super transparently, is our best educated guess with the information available to us. The real magic then comes in our work together.
Exactly.
Because now we're addressing feedback from your body physiologically and physically moving forward. If we read that data and we interpret it correctly, make the right changes moving forward, now we can create success.
That's where the magic happens. Same as like in programming.
Yeah.
When I program, it's a guess.
It's always a guess, dude. And I think so many experts, we'll use that with air quotes, are so afraid to admit that from insecurity. I think your insecurity just shows how bad you are.
Yes.
I think to be a real expert, you got to admit the truth.
I tell them up front, this is a starting point.
Yeah, it's a starting point. You're learning.
Right.
It's an assessment phase. I used to call it that. I used to call my first 2 weeks with a client an assessment phase.
Because
that's really what it is.
Unless you're lucky, I've had like one in my career. I've had one person the very first workout I gave
Knock
them
it out of the park.
Was money.
Yep.
Other than that, it's taken me 6 months to a year.
I've worked with people for 15 years now, and I've probably had 3 or 4 clients where the prescription I gave them worked for 6 months straight.
Yes.
You know, we're constantly tweaking. And the truth is, like, your lifestyle has to be on point for it to work for 6 to 8 months straight. Life's going to get in the way, man.
Yeah, two
like
we've
days
got, of blackout
drunks. We got kids
drunks.
At home. Yeah, yeah, I got blackout drunks, man.
How many kids
man.
You have now?
We got four kids
four
at home.
Kids at the house.
Yeah, we got our fourth kid 3 weeks ago, man. Yep. And
congratulations. Your stress Thank levels you are up and down all the time. So,
yeah, and that's... So,
Doug, no, look at him.
I was just sitting over here thinking you need to patent your 5-day-a-week, 48-hour binge diet.
Nah, man, it's you just gotta understand, dude. Because you know, I could build something to physical Travis, right? And then all of a sudden we sit down and we have a deep discussion, and you tell me that you've got children and that your children like to act out 3 times a week, right?
Three times a week.
That would be best scenario, right? So. But that's going to change the prescription.
Yes.
Because what we talked about earlier, stress and adaptation, that's an additional stressor. That's compromising your ability to recover.
Right.
So I need to build in more recovery into your protocol, regardless of whether you want fat loss, performance, or anything else. Because it's changing.
Yes.
It's changing that whole stress adaptation axis.
How many people do you guys, you know, train per coach? Like, you've got 15 coaches?
It depends on the coach and their comfort level. Yep. Right. So I've got some coaches that are like 40 people, I'm capped. You know, I've got some coaches that are like, give me 100 and I'll grind. I will openly and honestly say, I've said it before, when I did this, before I scaled and I was a one-man show, I had 167 clients.
Oh,
was my peak.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing.
Stressor.
You want to talk about
that's like 160
physical
stressors.
Me was a shit show, dude.
Yeah. You have to delete your phone number after that one.
Okay, hey, dude. No, you know what though, man? Like it's this, and you hit it on earlier, man. Like we are where we are because it's a passion project, dude.
Yeah.
Like I love it. I don't know how to tell people no, and right. So people come to me and they're like, I see poor advice out there, and I'm like, I can't let you go to that.
Right.
So yes, I'll take you on and I'll help you, and that's what led me to that 167. And I was working like no shit, man. 12 a.m. to 4 a.m. Or, like I was literally going to bed at midnight. I was getting up at 4 a.m. and I was sleeping 12 to 4. That's it. And I'd spend 20 hours a day on the phone if I had to. I would do what I had to do. And then I started scaling. And so, you know, I've got some I've got some coaches that are like, I'll grind. Me personally, I take on a very small amount because there's obviously, you guys know scaling a business. You have so many other obligations. I mean, just travel alone, guys. I'm on the road for like 4 weeks.
And you got to coach the coaches that are coaching.
Yeah, I got to make sure that the implementations that are going out are correct and that we're building the right business systems. And it's it's cool, man. It's, you know, as soon as a coach feels overwhelmed, we cap it and we build a waiting list for that coach. And we continue to scale and we bring another coach into our farm system. We build them up as an amazing coach. And, you know, one question I get all the time is how do we hire our coaches? And it's I don't hire skill sets. I hire people.
Right.
And so if I see you and I'm like, you're an amazing person and you express any interest in nutrition coaching, I will hire you and I'll teach you the skill set. But if you're a douchebag and you're the smartest person in the world, I can't teach you not to be a douchebag. Like, that's just not in my skill set. Sorry.
I know exactly what you're
You know what I mean?
About.
Like,
yes.
There's some really high, like, in one of our coaches, I'll shout her out on the podcast, Jess Durando. She came to me. She started as a client. And 2 years into it, she's like, if I go through your mentorship, like, do you think you would hire me one day? And, like, I didn't even let her finish her sentence. And I said, yes. And she's got a background in clinical psychology and clinical counseling.
Yeah.
I'm like, you understand people.
Yeah.
Fuck yes, I will hire you. Let me teach you the food stuff.
Yeah.
She's so good at connecting with people. Right? And so we've been very fortunate. But, you know, we touched on it earlier. So many of us are where we are because we're fucked up.
Yeah.
Our whole team jokes. We're the 15 most fucked up people in this industry. But that's why we can lead.
We keep looking for answers somewhere.
We've been through this shit. Yeah. Like, we can empathize with
totally.
You. We know where you're at. We'll meet you on your level, and we'll crush it.
Yeah.
So
where in how does the certification kind of fit into? Is it your hiring process, or is that so people can go on their own?
No, it's for them to go on their own. Okay. It's not designed in any way for us to hire people. I think some people ask that question and they hope it's that.
Yeah.
But you know, and listen, I mean, if you're fully transparent with me on the front end, that that's what you're doing with it. I'll be honest with you and tell you where we're at in our hiring process.
Yeah.
But no, it's more designed to give people what they need to go out and serve, man.
Help
and to,
people.
That's it, man. I said it at the very first cert, like if we take 100 people and they each touch 1,000 people in their lifetime, which is reasonable over the course of your lifetime. 100,000 people got helped because of that.
Yeah.
And that's just 100 people, dude. Yeah. By the end of this year, we're going to have put over 1,000 people in. Now we've touched 1 million.
I love that.
Wait till I put 10,000 people through. And we touch a billion fucking people.
Yeah.
Like, now we're talking.
Yeah, you go from this.
I want this impact that's, like, through the roof, dude. Like, I want the nutritional knowledge that's in this world to be executed properly. I want people getting real help. What will define my legacy? I believe we live in a world right now where nutrition coaches are fixing. We work in a world of repair.
Yeah.
The last 10 years has been a shit show dietarily. Yeah. Paleo, fasting, keto, all this shit, right? Yeah. And all of it misapplied.
Battle.
Right? We're living in a world where we're repairing the damage that was done with those protocols. 20 years from now, I hope we're living in a world of optimization. I hope that the new baseline is that we've done things so properly for 20 years that now the nutrition coaches that come in are getting clients that are not broken, and instead they're optimizing them. They're taking them to levels that we've never seen possible. So if we go from repair to optimization, my life was all lived. That's that's legacy, dude.
I mean,
there it is.
That was awesome.
That was the perfect way to close out the show.
Where can people find you?
Dude, in3nutrition.com for coaching. If they're interested in the cert, it's ncicertifications.com. I know you guys have a huge audience, so I shouldn't do this, but I will. Reach out to me on social media. Send me DMs. Send me messages. Jason Phillips or JasonPhillips_IN3 on Instagram. I answer everything.
There it is.
Personally, I don't have an assistant that does it. I will 1,000,000% respond to you. It may not be the same day. I try to, you know, I've got a newborn. I try to limit my time on social media.
As you should.
But I will 1,000,000% reach out to you because I know what it was like when I was in your shoes.
Yeah.
I know what it was like when I just simply wanted knowledge, when I wanted to connect with people, and they didn't write back. I don't ever want anyone to have that feeling with me, so I will always respond.
That's cool.
So,
Travis.
MashElite.com on Instagram, MashElite Performance.
Yeah. Follow me, Douglas E. Larson, on Instagram.
At Anders Varner, come to MovementRx.com, shrugged.thelowbackfix.com. $20 off your first program. Come and hang out with us. Strength conditioning and PT to get you healthy. Follow us on Instagram, Barbell Shrug Podcast. Me specifically at Anders Varner. And make sure you like, subscribe, YouTube, iTunes, all the things. Leave a comment. We read them, so be nice. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for making it all the way to the end of the show. If you liked the show, which I know you did, please go share it on Facebook, Instagram, or whatever social media channel you happen to be loving at the moment. Pinterest, Twitter?
Tumblr.
Share it on Tumblr.